Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC-LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everybody. How goes it? Thank you so much for being with us. It is a beautiful Sunday morning. At least there's no hail out there. Not yet. Did you find any damage to your car, Sean Tubbs?
Only the people who have keyed it so far. So no actual hail. Some keys, but no hail.
I went out and find little gravel hail dents in the roof of my car.
So that was yesterday?
Yeah, you didn't get the hail marks?
No, I was busy, so I unfortunately didn't see that. That's interesting. You would think I'd be up to date on this, that sort of stuff, but no.
No, you were inside a city council meeting or something?
Actually, I was at my other job, but I don't know if they're underwriters here, so maybe we shouldn't mention them.
No, yeah, probably not. No, there was a hailstorm at my home. Suddenly I hear click, 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 click. And then it speeds up, and all of a sudden the grass outside my house is getting whiter and whiter and whiter. And I'm like, is somebody throwing white gravel all outside my windows? And no, there, it's hailing, and it's becomes a thunderstorm hail. And at some point I go look outside, and there's dents all over the roof of my car. Fortunately, no cracked glass. I don't see any significant, not enough to really tell at the hood, but the roof of the car, you can see numerous dents.
Well, that's the second one this year that there was another one back in February. It's very strange, all this crazy weather we're getting.
I know. I don't care for it.
Nope, but it'll be interesting to see what we get this year.
Oh, well. So Sean Tubbs with us. Sean from Charlottesville tomorrow, covering the local news.
Yes. Well, most of it, at least.
Much of it.
As it pertains to public policy and our local government and elections and parking meters and what's happening with the landmark, all the fun stuff.
And that's what we're going to cover today. Right, we're going to cover local elections and public policy, transportation. We're going to talk about the hydraulic road and Route 29 interchange and what's going to be going on there. Talk about the parking meters returning to downtown area, at least for a six-month test.
A six-month pilot is the word that you're looking for there. Pilot. Yeah. So that'll be interesting.
And possibly some other discussion during the hour here on the Sunday morning wake-up call. This is 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Thank you for being with us here today. Sean Tubbs, let's start with Hydraulic Road and Route 29. We always seem to talk about transportation and Route 29 when you're here. We go way back. Here on the Sunday morning wake-up call with you. A panel of elected officials, business owners, and citizens have been put together to talk about the new interchange that will be upcoming.
Or could be coming up. There's no project that has been determined. It's a blank canvas on top of a lot of history in that area. And of course, but there could be an interchange. There could just be a couple of other small tweaks that they do there. But that process is getting underway now, and I've got more information than you need to know about it.
Well, let's start with some of the things that we do need to know about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, so if you've been, okay, so a few years ago, there was a project known as the Western Bypass. And of course, this is a story that goes back 20, 30, 40 years. But we're sort of at the end of that process now because the Western Bypass is not a project that's going to go forward. All of the money that was going to go into that project has gone into the construction projects that you're seeing on US 29 right now. We had the Rio Road grade separated intersection. So now 29 at long last. That's another project that was 30 years in the making. That's a project that's underway. The widening of 29 that's going on. The Berkmar Drive extension, which opens up a whole new section of Albemarle County potentially for development, and potentially opens up the UVA Research Park for development. So that Western Bypass project turned into all these other projects. The question is now what happens at the other end, Hydraulic Road, where now if you can just picture a map here, where three quadrants of that intersection are in the city of Charlottesville, one is in Albemarle County. So it's a little bit more
political. And that's the Trader Joe's corner.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, where Stonefield is in the county. So Stonefield is in the county. The other three sections are in the city. And a lot of those areas, a lot of those quadrants are going to be, you know, turned into something else, especially the Kmart. So that Kmart, if you're shopping there a lot, don't get too used to it because it won't be there much longer.
When someone does something to this area, I'm assuming VDOT will be doing this work?
Well, this is what's interesting is that, yes, so all of those other projects got funded. There was about $20 million in funding for planning of this intersection. And at one point, that stuff, the planning wasn't supposed to start occurring until next year.
$20 million to plan what was going to happen.
Technically, $10 million is for an extension, a second extension of Hillsdale Drive. That's another one of these projects that's currently underway. The Hillsdale Drive extension would be $10 million. It would bring it a little bit further south. The other $10 million was for preliminary engineering. Now they've decided to release some of that money into a transportation study, but more importantly, a small area plan. Now that sounds very jargony, but
it is.
It is. Some examples of that are the strategic investment area in Charlottesville, the West Main streetscape that's going on here in Albemarle County, just up the road from where the studios are here. There's a small area plan for Rio Road because that investment that VDOT and the state put into that area is now getting the county, Albemarle County, thinking about how they can use that to redevelop Fashion Square Mall, redevelop Albemarle Square with the help of the people who own those buildings. But what investment can the public sector make to make that work? Now that same process is beginning at the very beginning for Hydraulic Road, which is a key intersection. There's a lot going on there. There's a lot of people who are thinking, okay, when are you going to take Hydraulic Road and turn that into a grade separate interchange, drop 29 below and have Hydraulic go over? That isn't necessarily going to happen. And part of the reason is it's very, very expensive. And those very, very big expensive projects at the moment are currently not fashionable.
But is the Rio Road Route 29 grade separated interchange, was that considered a success?
It is so far in terms of how fast it was implemented. I believe I was actually on the show this time last year to talk about that.
Right.
It was completed way, I think something like 46 days ahead of schedule. It so far hasn't caused a lot of disruption. Some people might disagree with that, but in terms of they got it done very quickly. They opened up all the businesses around. There was a massive advertising campaign to get people to go to those locations. During the work, and the signage there is a lot better. I believe that signage for some of those businesses are going to continue. And I'm still waiting, and I have a question out. Now, what I want to see in terms of success is how fast is it moving traffic? Is traffic flowing better on 29? And I believe that we're not going to know, I don't believe we're going to get good measurements on that until Berkmar Drive Extension is open. Hillsdale is open. The construction, again, is right outside the studio here for that project.
And for those who don't know all the names, Berkmar Drive Extension is the one that's going to take the bridge behind
Sam's Club,
yeah. and the Hillsdale is the one that's going to take people behind the Walmart, or not the Walmart, the Whole Foods.
Yes, and that, actually, I was a little late here getting today because that road is not quite complete yet. You can go behind that now, but of course, it's These are all projects that were long awaited, and they're being implemented.
The Charlottesville standard, 20 years plus.
But that's the interesting thing, though, is that what's interesting about this panel discussion that they're going to have is that it's being facilitated by the same person, this guy named Philip Chouquette. He's a former VDOT commissioner who is essentially, he shepherded these other projects. So the bypass dies, it goes away. But 3 years between 2014, March of 2014 and March 2017, all this stuff actually suddenly happened. There wasn't endless planning. There was just simply a sense of, we're going to get this done and we're going to get it done quickly. We're going to open up everything we do. So all of those meetings were televised. All the information was out there. Now contrast that to the Western Bypass, when I had to file Freedom of Information Act requests to get basic information about what the people were talking about. So in a way, you could go ahead and say that was that's two different ways of presenting public information about a road. And now back to hydraulic, though. What's interesting, though, is that a lot of people are saying, not a lot of people, but many people are clamoring for the grade-separated interchange. The question about that, though, is that will probably cost about $70 million. That's approximately how much the railroad grade-separated interchange cost. VDOT doesn't have that kind of money, and now, because of this administration, projects have to go through something called Smart Scale in order to qualify for funding. And that is going to be very difficult to do for a $70 million project.
Do we know why people are asking for that? Is it because people were happy with the speed in which it went from start to finish? Is that the number one reason why they would be clamoring for it?
I think there's a lot of sense. I think the clamoring on city council, and especially among some city councilors, and on among the Board of Supervisors, is how can we use this to redevelop our urban core? How can we get transportation moving through here? So is there a bus lane that goes through there? How do you get pedestrians across so that you get people, say, who live in the city's Greenbrier neighborhood walking across to Stonefield, or vice versa, people who live on Commonwealth Avenue in that area, in the hydraulic area, walking to whatever the redeveloped Kmart will be? This is a chance to try to plan for a very scarce resource, land, and trying to incentivize the private developers for how they can develop something, maybe put some homes there, maybe put some residential units so people live in this area too, because that's one of the biggest issues in this community now, and we're jumping ahead a little bit, is to the affordable housing issue. But so this Hydraulic 29 panel isn't just about getting an intersection built. It's just as much about saying, what do the elected officials and appointed officials working with the private interests, figuring out how that area of land should be. And there's a little bit of money from VDOT to pay for it. And the goal is to have something done, is to have a project in place, planning by the end of, I think, the middle of next summer. So it's a very fast project, very similar to the Belmont Bridge replacement, which we can get to in a few minutes. There's a new consultant who's doing that. Yeah. The idea is to get this stuff done quickly so that it can qualify for funding.
Sean Tubbs, our guest today here on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Sean, a writer, reporter, Charlottesville Tomorrow. He's the guy who has to go to all the meetings that the rest of us are really glad not to attend and just want to
read about meetings. They're so much fun. There's a whole come and visit sometime, and or follow me on Twitter, because I'm at most of these meetings, and you can learn a lot about what's going on just by following
me
on Twitter.
That's the thing that we're happy to do. Mm-hmm. We'd rather not always attend. We want someone to be there
and that's why I work for a nonprofit.
Do the recycling for us.
That's a lot of it. I'm about to celebrate my 10th anniversary at Charlottesville Tomorrow. And, I think that having somebody at the meetings who's been there, it means that not a lot of stuff passes by. And so there's a lot going on. The difficulty is trying to distill it down into pieces of information that people get interested in. And that's where Twitter comes in. So at these meetings, as I can't write about all the meetings I go to, but there's a lot of cool stuff going on and a lot of interesting stuff, a lot of information out there. And my job, hopefully, is to get people to it.
Sean also started Charlottesville Podcast.
That is correct.
So there are many, many, many people who owe Sean thank you for that, including Sunday morning wake-up call. This is WPVC 1115. We are talking about Hydraulic and 29. With Charlottesville having three of the four corners and Albemarle County just one, are we going to have this blockade of, I don't want that, I want to have more voting on it than you do, or can VDOT or someone else on a higher level, the state level, just say, sorry, guys, this is more important if we do it this way. Step aside. We're plowing through.
That is maybe a less diplomatic way of explaining a lot of what the Route 29 solutions process was. There was, again, like all of these projects which have been, so the Hillsdale Drive extension, for instance, that was a project that was in the planning stage for 10 years. It was called for, it actually came out of a 2000 study that tried to inform how to move traffic better around this area. So that project, though, is now under construction. It'll be finished. It'll be finished later on this year. The Berkmar Drive extension, that was a project that nobody thought would ever happen, but suddenly, this administration, the McAuliffe administration, decided this was a priority and they moved it through. They had the funding and they moved it through. And 3 years later, I don't think we've ever seen that many projects move that fast. Going back to the hydraulic one, it's a little thorny. It might not necessarily have gone through this process if that had been the project that had been prioritized first. Because as you said, that there are a lot of inherent in this community are politics between the city and the county. And that very issue can come up. Historically, going back to January of 1995, City Council had a proposal in front of them to build a grade-separated interchange there. City Council, after a public hearing, there are some who say that the plans that were shown were overly large. It was designed to sort of kill it. I wasn't around that time. I was just getting started in my career, but not in this community. And council voted that down. And so there's always been a sort of, at that point, the Board of Supervisors really wanted that project to be the project that goes forward. And it keyed off a series of events that led to the finger trap that was the Western Bypass. That thing never got built because there was so much opposition from some people wanted it, some people didn't. And the resistance kept that down for quite a long time. This project's a little different. And we'll see what happens. But I think you're right in that this one could be a little bit thornier. But it's interesting because these panel discussions have just gotten underway and the owner of the Holiday Inn or has a representative, the representatives from Stonefield, which just got purchased by a New York-based company. They're flying a guy down every 2 weeks to be at these meetings. A representative from Riverbend Development they're the ones who built the Whole Foods and they're ones who will redevelop the Kmart. That they are involved. There's a city councilor involved. There's members of all sorts of environmental organizations. There's people who it's going to be interesting to see how this one develops because there's no project. And so this one will be a little different.
Right. There's always, I have acquaintances who are always going to say, why is there somebody involved from an ecological standpoint? Well, you don't think about it, but all that material is going to drain down into where the 250 bypass meets that little, what is it called? It's that little connector road that runs down past the Whole Foods. If you don't stop and look, because generally you're fighting that little bit of traffic, but that is a major ecological bit of area. I mean, there's some huge drainage pieces there.
Well, and that's a lot of what the preliminary engineering. When you hear the word study for sometimes we really should use the word preliminary engineering because a lot of the hydraulics and the hydrology really have to be taken into consideration. It's called hydraulic road for a reason. There's a lot of water that comes down that way. That historically in this area there was a village called Hydraulic that I believe had a dam there. So there's a lot of water. We're in the Piedmont. Water's going, it's essentially sloping down from west to east. And those are, that's one of the considerations that have to be built into this. And, you know, at least until right now, the federal government takes that very seriously.
Two fairly quick points, if we can do it. It is 11:20. You write about two phases of work. There's land use planning and transportation work. I don't understand the difference.
The land use work tries to get to ideas of what if the government's okay. So cities and counties have comprehensive plans, which have visions for what they'd like to happen in a place. That particular area around this intersection is a growth area for both. It's valuable land. To inform that, it's a decision of how could you change the zoning maybe to make it easier for people to redevelop the land. How do you incentivize? Do you try to make it so that there's provisions for affordable housing? So the land use information, that's sort of a jargony way of like, if you can imagine you're playing SimCity and you're at the very beginning of the game and you're trying to lay out where you want the roads to go, the pathways, the connections that aren't necessarily just, maybe there are some new roads, some new ring roads that need to go through. Now, it's a little bit difficult because one of those corners is already built. Stonefield is less than 5 years old. It's going to be 10, 15, 20, 30 years before that redevelops. So that's one piece of the puzzle missing. The Holiday Inn probably isn't going anywhere. But if you look at the Kroger lot, where there's a Kroger currently, now that Kroger is moving. And if you look at the Kmart lot, there's a lot of potential for how that might develop. Do you put apartments there? You know, what's the dance between what the elected officials and appointed officials want versus what the private owner of the land wants to build? This is a plan to get everybody in the same room together to start talking about that. And then the transportation follows.
The other question is, you know, they've already done the Best Buy ramp. It is what needs to be done or what they would like done at the Hydraulic and 29. Has that been altered in any way because they did the Best Buy ramp first?
Well, that's a lot of it. I think, so going back to that 2000 study, actually 2004, it came out, the Best Buy ramp, Hillsdale, other projects in the area. Those were projects that were originally called for then. This is sort of a sort of now, okay, we have these pieces in place before we do anything else. What is the best, most effective way to build that? Would a grade separated interchange work? That's probably something that will be discussed. That project, as I said, will be very expensive and it's going to need votes from two different communities to make that work. And that can be tricky. So that's sort of a wild card at this point. Maybe it's a bus lane. Maybe it's a pedestrian bridge. It's really a blank slate. And on Thursday, for anybody who wants to get their feet wet and try one of these meetings, you can watch that whole meeting online at route29solutions.org. So the next meeting of this panel is Thursday from 2 to 4, and it is televised live on the internet. And I probably won't be there, so I'll be watching along with you. I can't be at all the meetings. Love when they film a meeting, it means I can sit at home.
I mean, it's crazy. Obviously, we need to do something. If you're on the east side heading west, so if you're in that little connector road in front of Whole Foods and you want to go across Route 29 to Trader Joe's, you can't even go straight.
Yeah.
You have to like do this little curvy dance mm-hmm. through the line. If it's at nighttime and you're the only car and you don't know where you are, you're going to end up going the wrong way on the wrong side of the median.
Yeah.
It's really a dangerous road and something needs to happen. It should happen quickly, and I hope the right people make the right choices.
Well, and people can get involved. This is an interactive process. There will be at least two public meetings about this. I think one in April, one later on in the summer. So people, that's something that I stress so much. People can get involved. All of these meetings are open. It takes a little bit of your time. It's something that if you have an opinion, pay attention. And the information's all right there. Charlottesville tomorrow. We won't be covering every single meeting, but I'll certainly be paying attention, and I'm always here to answer questions.
Well, you can call up and ask a question, although we're going to take a break and come back with another topic. But we can always jump back if you have a question, 434-284-9470. That's 434-284-9470. Write it down. Use it. Stretch the fingernail muscles. 434-284-9470. Sean Tubbs here, Charlottesville Tomorrow, talking about local news. 11:26, Sunday morning wake-up call. Sean Tubbs here. You're welcome to call up if you have a question about what's going on Hydraulic and 29. Make your comment here to Sean Tubbs. He did make the offer. Or if you don't want to go to the meeting, or if you just want to learn more, what's the Charlottesville Tomorrow website?
Stevilletomorrow.org is the way you can get most of our information. And but to follow me on Twitter at Sean Tubbs, S-E-A-N-T-U-B-B-S. And yeah, you'll learn a lot more than you ever wanted to know about everything. But these details matter. These details are how we govern ourselves and how we build our communities.
Which is why it's so wonderful that Sean Tubbs comes on to the Sunday morning wake-up call yearly and sometimes more frequently if I can bug him appropriately. So if you didn't know already by following Sean Tubbs on Twitter or going to the Charlottesville Tomorrow website or...
Smoke signals.
Mm-hmm. I think a couple other newspapers, if you read them, have put up articles about it. But City of Charlottesville will be putting up parking meters downtown this August.
Mm-hmm. This will be an interesting experiment. This is a long time in coming. So the meters were taken out, I believe, they were put in, I think, in the late 40s, taken out periodically in stages. Again, I wasn't here at the time, but I believe by the late 90s, most of them were gone again, maybe the early 90s. If anybody knows, please call in and tell me for certain. But now they're coming back in a certain point, in certain areas, right around the downtown mall. This is a six-month pilot project to test out the equipment. These won't be just coins. You'll be able to use your credit card or your debit card to order, you know, to basically pay for your space. The exact prices haven't been set yet. The recommendation from the consultant is $2 an hour. And it's interesting because the way they're implementing it is going to be really strange. Now, the scope of this is on Water Street, between Water Street and Market Street. I think, but I'm not sure the eastern and western boundaries. I believe 6th Street on the east side and 2nd Street West on the other side. But the map is on our website if you want to take a look. The idea is that this is a better way to manage parking, that if people are paying for parking, you might get employees not parking there. That's what a lot of this is about.
I think the phrase that was used was people will give it more value if it actually costs something.
Yes. And so a lot of it is to eliminate people who are doing what they call the two-hour shuffle. The two-hour shuffle is a phrase that gets used for people who, city employees mostly, who people who work downtown, who are using up the parking spaces, keeping them away from customers. So the idea is if those people have to pay in order to do it, you know, that's $8 an hour. Well, that would be about a 16-hour day if it's $2 an hour. They might think twice about what they do. They might either purchase a parking space someplace else. They might take the bus. They might park further away. These are some of the ideas and some of the theories. Now, this is a six-month pilot. There's a lot of uncertainty about this. It's something that council voted on last year. The request for proposals is out now. So if anybody is a parking company and wants to do this, you can give your equipment away to the city to do this because the city is not going to pay any money up front, or at least they're hoping not to pay any money up front for this. And it should start this August. There's an information session in City Space on Wednesday at 6 o'clock if you want to come and talk to people about this.
Do we know, I mean, so the argument is that city employees, and I'm assuming that it's, and possibly some folks who work for city businesses downtown are the ones who are taking up some of the spaces downtown, keeping them from customers who are coming downtown.
That's the idea. And so the idea is that you want to get, or not you, but the theory is that you want people to go into the garages where theoretically the prices there are cheaper. Well, the situation that we're in at the moment, the prices, at least one of those parking garages, won't be cheaper. The Water Street parking garage, which of course is in a legal dispute between the city of Charlottesville and the Charlottesville Parking Center. The city has just kicked out the Charlottesville Parking Center from, or maybe not kicked out is a strong word, a strong phrase.
Well, there is a lawsuit, so how?
Well, that's for the Water Street parking garage.
Okay.
Now, the Charlottesville Parking Center was created, I believe, in the early 60s to sort of as a public-private partnership to build parking, to make sure that the downtown area was competitive with Barracks Road, was competitive eventually with Fashion Square. That was in the 80s when that was built. But the idea there, though, really is that we'll see what happens. It's going to be a really interesting thing. I have a friend who when she wants to come down to downtown, she doesn't really want to come downtown because her perception is you have to pay for parking. Citizens really haven't been clamoring for this. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens when all of a sudden you have to pay for something that was free to you before. Now they're not free spaces. They have to be maintained. You have parking enforcement on them already, so you're paying somebody to drive around in the car, and because that's what the city of Charlottesville do. They have their parking enforcement people are in cars, driving around, congesting the streets, and that's interesting too. So it's going to be a big risk. Then, of course, you know, I just had somebody just send me a message, saying that basically parking leaders could be obsolete if we have self-driving cars. You know, what is the future of parking requirements? This is a tension. You know, cars are something. This is a progressive city. There's a lot of people who think we won't be driving cars. Is that a reality that happens? Do self-driving cars really happen? I know that city planners are thinking about this, but neighbors who want parking requirements also, they don't want to take the risk that we're going to get out of our cars. I rambled a lot there. A lot.
Well, that's part of bringing Sean Tubbs on. when you go to city meetings, that's what you get.
And I never get to talk at those city meetings. So this is my chance. This is my only chance right here. And I'm not going to throw away my shot.
But, you know, there's other parts about going downtown to park, which is there are some people who go downtown to park. By the way, this is Sean Tubbs here from Charlottesville Tomorrow. And we are talking about local news that you can find in Sean's articles on Charlottesville Tomorrow. Seavilletomorrow.org?
Seavilletomorrow.org, yes.
So there
and you
are
can
some,
follow that on Twitter, too.
There you go.
Yeah.
When you go downtown, there are some people who go downtown, and you go downtown, and because your time is just as valuable as a free parking space, you go downtown. And whatever way you go, you're going, you drive that direction. And if you see a free spot, you take it. And if you don't, you're not driving around the downtown mall looking for a free spot. But if you see one, great. And if you don't, you're just driving to the parking garage and getting a paid spot.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the free spot is just, it's a lottery ticket, and you either win if you happen to pass one, and if you don't, you know, whatever. And then there are others who don't even think about a free spot because it requires what is that awful thing that you have to do?
The 2-hour shuffle?
No.
Oh, pay?
No.
Uh,
you have to do the awful parking job.
Oh yes, parallel parking.
Parallel parking.
Oh, but parallel parking's fun.
But there are a vast number of people who would never not. It's one thing if you can pull straight in, but if you actually have to stop and reverse to do the parallel parking, oh no, never mind. I'm just going to go get a, just going to go to the garage and get a spot.
And that's the interesting thing about all of this is that, you know, each of us have our decisions and our choices about what we do. And of course, a lot of people, and this is what I think a lot of people in the business community downtown are concerned about, is that they want to have the spaces. I think that there are business owners downtown who really would like to make sure that city spaces are reserved for customers. So, but one thing that will be interesting is, though, is there a validation system? So if I'm a customer coming downtown and I'm shopping at a store down there, can that person stamp me and give me 2 hours of free parking? Well, from what I understand, at least with under this pilot, the validation process for that wouldn't work necessarily. Now, it could, but when I spoke with the new parking manager, so the city of Charlottesville now has a parking manager that they've hired to do this. He's a guy named Rick Siebert. He's this is his job. He's now the parking manager. They
have
a parking
department. There's another $50,000.
$50? What was that?
Well, I was being generous.
Nope. Let's step that up quite a bit.
I was trying to be generous in terms of, you know, didn't want to.
Well, it's, you know, so that's going to be the question. And so at this meeting on Wednesday, Rick Siebert will be there answering questions. And, you know, this is something that communities have done all over, communities of this size have done this all over the nation. And it's going to be an experiment. It's going to be a test. And, of course, there's something else going on this year, an election. We're electing two city councilors. So I'm certain this will become an issue, you know, as this develops. Of course, will it make a difference? I don't know. But that's up to citizens and it's up to journalists to ask our candidates questions.
Well, 11:37 here on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call with Sean Tubbs. Let's take a break and come back and talk about the elections. And here we are on a beautiful, almost spring Sunday morning. Is it spring yet? I don't think so.
I think, well, for today, maybe not tomorrow.
I can't think of, it's March in Virginia. So whatever the calendar says, it doesn't matter because the weather determines everything. 284-9470 if you have a question about the parking meters and the pilot program in Charlottesville downtown, or the hydraulic and 29 interchange panel. Mm-hmm. But we're going to move on to the upcoming elections in Charlottesville and in Albemarle with our guest today, Sean Tubbs from Charlottesville Tomorrow. So, Sean, there are multiple elections, right? But we're going to spend our time with Charlottesville City Council.
And, yes.
And Albemarle Board of Supervisors.
Mm-hmm. It's still young. So just at the outset, you know, anybody can still get involved and run for office. Everybody wants to run for office, right? Isn't that like what we aspire to do as Americans?
Well, since you use the word young, let's start with Albemarle.
Albemarle, yes.
Because young fits one of the candidates that has announced that he's going to run.
Yes. Well, you know, so we've got, so in the county, things are sort of interesting because so far there's only, all right, so there are three magisterial districts, a fancy way of saying districts. There are three districts up. There's the Rio Road district. There is the Rio district, the Samuel Miller district, and the Jack Jewett district. Only two of the three incumbents are seeking reelection. Brad Sheffield, who's a Democrat, has opted not to run for a second term. He's had some, we don't need to go into the reasons for that. He's not running. But I can say that so far, there's one person has surfaced, a guy named Ned Galloway, who used to be on the school board, has been elected to an office in Albemarle County. He was the at-large person. The county is strange because there are six members of the Board of Supervisors, but seven members of the school board, seven members of the Planning Commission, and they don't have a seventh member at large. Very, very strange, because it means that, well, That's really nerdy.
It means there. That's all right. Nerdy is a good word for this topic.
It's what I am, you know? if anybody wants to play Dungeons and Dragons later, we can... But the way I play Dungeons and Dragons is just government meetings. You know, you roll to see if you get a stream crossing. So anyway, going back though. Okay, so Sheffield is running. Sheffield's not running. Ned Galloway is running. He doesn't have any opposition yet. Diantha McKeel, who ran as an independent, she was on the school board for four terms before being elected to the supervisors 4 years ago. She is running as a Democrat this time, which is significant. She does not have any opposition yet. In the Samuel Miller district, the Democrat Liz Palmer is seeking a second term. She is being challenged by Republican John Lowry, who was a member of the Economic Development Authority. He ran in 2009, and he is running on a pro-economic development platform, which is certainly interesting. There's still time. The Albemarle County Republicans just elected a new chair in a guy named George Urban, who I've never met before. I don't believe I have, at least. If I have George, I apologize. So George Urban is now in a position where he can maybe recruit some candidates to go after those seats. I do expect there to be races. I expect all races to be competitive, but yet we're getting closer and closer to the time then, though. If you're going to run as a Republican, you're running out of time.
Why is that?
There are deadlines. So there's all sorts of deadlines to announce your candidates. Actually, that might be the city. I believe the Republican Party will do a caucus sometime in May. But in order to really start doing this, you need to start getting your name out there.
Signatures,
all that stuff. You've actually got until, if you're running as an independent candidate, you have until June 13th. In both the city and the county to get all your paperwork in place with the registrar. So that's the county. That's not as pressing as the city, because the city is a little bit different.
Well, let's talk about the Albemarle School Board for a moment, because that's where the young you've got an Albemarle County School Board candidate who is still in school.
Yes, and he's still 17, but he would be 18. He's 18, I think, when he would take office. Actually, I think he turns 18 in September. There's a student at Western Albemarle named Julian Waters. He is challenging the incumbent in the Samuel Miller district. And it's sort of interesting. You know, it's interesting to see now in the school board races, those are all independent. So nobody runs as a party and the parties can't formally endorse anybody. So that'll be interesting. That seems to be the only contested race that I'm aware. My colleague Josh Mandel is the person who covers that. He knows a little bit more about that. But we do have so far Pam Moynihan. She's a member of the school board, has been representing the Rio district for many years. She is not seeking another term. There's a woman named Mary McIntyre who has surfaced and is running for the first time as a candidate for that seat. In the Jack Jewett district, Kate Acuff is running. She's running for her second term. So far, no candidates are facing her. So, you know, again, it gets back to that, is that we would love to see contested races for every race, because this is where the ideas come in. This is the essence of a democracy. The ideas, putting people together. We will do voter guides, and we will ask people questions at all levels. At the council, supervisor, and school board level. So, that's what.
What are your thoughts on this young man who is still in school running for the school board?
Well, I don't cover that as much, so at all really. So I've not actually met him, but I think it's great. I mean, I think it's great anytime you see people running and putting forth their ideas and deciding that, you know, that this is something that, I mean, it takes a lot of time to knock on doors, to get a platform in place, to raise money, which is something that if you want to get elected, you got to do. This is a full-time job to run if you want to win. You know, he's certainly. I think
I read in the Charlottesville Tomorrow article that you said someone else had written, your colleague. I can't remember the name.
So Aaron Richardson, who was our former colleague, he was our education correspondent until a couple of weeks ago. He's now back at the Daily Progress.
I wanted to give that person their dues.
Yes.
Said that because Mr. Waters is still technically a minor at this point, mm-hmm. his family was, he couldn't, Mr. Waters couldn't get the money himself. So he's dependent on his family others to go get the money
and the signatures
him. But Mr. Waters said that he has a front row seat to local education issues.
Well, I think that's it. Is that
no? I thought that was tremendous
because you know he's. I mean, it would be a lot of fun. I think to do this. I think to sort of do that. You know, him getting actually elected and serving, that would be really interesting. And,
My hometown recently elected a 20-year-old to city council.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
He won over several, I don't know. I mean, obviously he's over 18, so he's an adult, but he won over several more traditional adult candidates. And, I guess they elected three or four people to, mm-hmm. in their city council race. And he was one of them. Over three or four people who didn't win.
Mm-hmm. It's also a great plot thread on Parks and Recreation. Have you seen that?
I haven't seen all of them.
I never get to talk about Parks and Recreation, but that's so much of what, you know, my job is like. But this person, though, he's running. I think having somebody who is that close to education making decisions could be really interesting. It certainly would make it more interesting, but I don't really have a good feeling on the school board race, but it's also hard to beat an incumbent though at any race. So it's possibly an uphill battle for him, but if he's earnest and he spends his summer knocking on doors with his mother and family, because he can't do a lot of the work himself, you know, certainly make for a good story.
11:48 here on Sunday morning wake up call with our guest Sean Tubbs from Charlottesville tomorrow. Well, we still have Charlottesville City Council to talk about. There are two Charlottesville City Council seats open, correct? Mm-hmm.
That is true.
Why are there two?
There are five members of City Council, and they stagger the races so that in one election there's two seats up. And then in 2 years, there'll be three seats up.
Are those two people stepping down?
Well, so those seats, the seats held by Kristen Zekos and Bob Fenwick are up for re-election. Kristen Zekos has opted not to run for a third term, so she will be going off the board at the end of this year. That leaves at least one open seat. Bob Fenwick is seeking a second term as a Democrat. Now, Fenwick had previously run as an independent twice before deciding in 2013 to become a Democrat and then won the primary. Usually the Democratic primary is the election, with some exceptions, but in recent history that certainly has been the case. Even going back to 1948, I found an editorial in the Daily Progress from 1948 where they're lamenting the idea that the Democratic Party essentially decides what the city council is. So even back that far, the Democratic Party has had a lock on the city of Charlottesville. Not entirely, but for the most part. So
70 years of grouching.
Well, there have been. So Rob Schilling was elected as a Republican back in 2002, did not win re-election back in 2006 because there were stronger Democratic candidates that year. And but going back to this race in 2017, Fenwick is going to run for another term, but he's going to have to win the Democratic primary first. So far, there are two other Democrats in the race.
And he got some bad press with with his early decision making about the Lee statue.
Yes, he was the vote who he's been the swing vote on that for a long time.
Well, not his eventual decision.
No,
but his early non-decision.
But yes, at the first meeting, he abstained from the vote, so it essentially deadlocked. Now that was just they eventually did go ahead and do that after a lot of meetings, two by two meetings, but among councilors. What that means is that councilors can't get together no more than two of them can get together elected. If there's more than two of them, they have to declare a meeting and tell people. That's the freedom of information, not the freedom of, that's the Open Meetings Act. But there was a lot of information that went on. And yes, he did receive a lot of bad press about that. And he's going to have to prove that he's worthy of a second term to Charlottesville Democrats.
Right. People said, look, you're on council to make a decision. Why are you sitting here after months of talking about this and saying, I don't know what I'm going to do?
Well, I think that in some cases, I think Wes Bellamy, Councillor Bellamy, I believe, said at the time that you're holding our votes hostage here because people want a decision. People in the room that night wanted a decision. And so they didn't get one that night, but they did get one 2 weeks later. So I'm not so sure that's going to hurt him as much as other things. What will hurt him in a lot of ways is if he can't raise the same amount of money as the other candidates. And we should mention who they are. There's Heather Hill, who is the president of the North Downtown Neighborhood Association. I think I got the name wrong a little bit there. And then there's Amy Laufer, who's a member of the school board, currently in her second term. These are people who we will see in the middle of April. We will see how much money they've raised. And so one of the issues will be, so the primary is on June 13th. So we now have 3 months until the Democratic primary. There's currently three candidates. The window to become a candidate in the Democratic primary is fast closing. I believe it's March 30th. You have to have registered with the party, with the Democratic Party, to do that. The Republicans so far are not running a candidate. I'm not entirely sure of the rules on this, but I believe that window is closing for city candidates. But there is an independent in the race. There are actually two independents have filed.
Right.
One is a little bit more high profile than the other one. She is she's a member of the group Equity and Peace in Charlottesville. This is the new group that is formed called EPIC, which I believe they have been on this program in the past.
Dave Norris was on several weeks ago.
So former Mayor Dave Norris, they have not endorsed a candidate yet, but they are going to hold their own city council forum sometime in April. So Nakia Walker, she's the independent candidate, and she's one of the two independent candidates. The other one is a guy named Dale Woodson, who hasn't really surfaced. Just to give you a point of what I mean by that, he's not on the ballot yet, but he's filed paperwork, which is a very important step. But just to give you a sense of how you can tell if somebody is a serious candidate or not, do they show up at city council meetings and do they start getting involved? Because these meetings, once you have this job, if you're elected, this is a job. You're not paid a full-time job. I believe the salary is like, I want to say $12,000 or $13,000 a year. But you go to a lot of meetings, and there's a lot of business comes in with that. So what's interesting about that, though, is that if you don't go to these meetings, there was a budget forum meeting on Wednesday, and only two members of the public showed up, and two other people asked questions, and they were both city council candidates. So that's currently going on. There's a lot going on. And what I would like to see is, I mean, this is a general comment. I'd like to see a lot more people getting involved. I'd like to see more people running for office. Again, our democracy is only as good as the people who decide to run and to participate in the process. And the process, there's a lot of process and people get fatigued by it. But again, these are the decisions about how we govern ourselves and how we build our community.
Sean Tubbs here from Charlottesville Tomorrow. As we talk about local news, I'm currently talking about the upcoming local elections the second Tuesday in May?
Which part? Sorry.
The city council and
June 13th.
June 13th, yes. Are the actual election.
Well, that's the Democratic primary. And then, of course, so the top two vote getters in the Democratic primary, currently there are three candidates. They will go on to the general election. So Nakia Walker, they'll face Nakia Walker, who I'm going to go out on a limb. Well, I'm not going to say what's going to happen, but I'm fairly certain that she will have some support. An independent candidate has not won election to city council in modern history, but there are precedents for an independent candidate doing well. Back in 2007, it was interesting. There were some in the community who split. who put forth a ticket of Democrat Holly Edwards, who passed away earlier this year, and Peter Kleeman. There was an independent Peter Kleeman who I believe got 23% of the vote, which is pretty good. It's not great. It doesn't get you enough to win. But I think there's a lot of people who are concerned about the future of this, the future direction of the city of Charlottesville and how that manifests itself in the election. That's part of what Charlottesville Tomorrow is here to do. We're here to ask the questions, to get people and to get the candidates to think very clearly about what some of these policy decisions they're going to have to make are. Because policy has consequences. We will ask all kinds of questions, and we will provide as much information as we can, as will our other colleagues in the media. Shows like this, you know, this is a very active community, and we want to help facilitate that activity.
Recognize that Sean Tubbs and Charlottesville Tomorrow cannot back particular candidates. But do you think that a group like Epic, you have Dave Norris, who has been one of the most facial members of Epic, who has been in the past the mayor of Charlottesville, mm-hmm. a strong Democrat in Charlottesville. Do you know if Ms. Walker are there rumors that she is being stepping forward?
Well, she definitely
with
is
Epic behind her.
That part, I think, you know, when I talked to Dave about that this past week, they're very clear that they're not going to endorse any candidates until after they have this forum. She was an organizing member of it. She's not a member of their steering committee, not on their board of directors. And I think that Dave was in attendance in the office, at her campaign speech this week. But she did say that Holly Edwards and Epic was sort of formed in to do something after the passing of Holly Edwards, to take her spirit and to sort of try to energize it into trying to make a difference in helping people in Charlottesville. That's what Epic aspires to do. They would like to hold the government a little bit more accountable in terms of doing some of the more aspirational things about economic justice, about affordable housing. And I think that Nakia said at her announcement that she's clearly running because Holly Edwards kept asking her to, and kept asking her. So she's running for that reason. And I think she's got an interesting platform. She says she's not running as a Democrat because she says it's maybe time to do things a little bit differently. And, you know, we're in very different times right now. Our politics, national, state, and local, are going to reflect that. And I think that's, you know, that's, we've got a rich history in this community and this, a rich and troubled history. There are some things that maybe have to be reconciled, but we got here through all those individual decisions that were made in the past. Now, how do we get to a future? Well, pay attention to Charlottesville Tomorrow.
Sean Tubbs, thank you so much for being here. Next week, Dan Gold will have Indivisible on the air. And thank you so much, everybody, for listening. Take care.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Production assistance and engineering from Sean McCord and Mike Friend. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake-Up Call, only on WPVC-LP Charlottesville.